During 1986, while I was curator of an African-American exhibit, two elderly women, one of them who was walking with two canes, asked to see me. The one without the canes introduced herself as Mrs. Hilda Yates Warden and said, "Here's someone I'd like to introduce you to." But the other one with the cane shook her off and said, "I can speak for myself." Slowly, with great dignity, she straightened herself up and declared, "Young man, my name is Alice Jackson Stewart." When I gasped in shock, the Alice Jackson of 1935, she regally replied, "The very same." I had erroneously assumed that Alice Jackson had been deceased, given in 1935, at that point, had been more than 50 years previously. As I escorted her to the exhibit case where her 1935 letter, which is in the program, was displayed, Mrs. Stewart softly remarked, "I thought I had been forgotten. I thought the university had forgotten me." Meeting Alice Jackson Stewart was one of the highlights of my academic career and served as a reminder to me as a historian that history is made by real, breathing human beings, not abstract objects. And so my paper this morning focuses on Alice Jackson's 1935 attempt to become University of Virginia's first African-American student. And her efforts involved the NAACP, Virginia State College for Negroes, which was at the time the state's only public school for blacks, citizens and state officials, and created a public firestorm of segregation defenders and opponents. Because of her, Virginia, like other southern states, sacrificed tax dollars on segregation's altars to send blacks to northern graduate and professional schools rather than admit them to schools in their home state. And she battled racism throughout her entire life, culminating in a second attempt to enroll at the University of Virginia during the 1950s. Only during the final decades of her long life as Alice Jackson Stewart did she receive overdue appreciation as a heroine and inspirational civil rights trailblazer. Now, African-American women have a long history at the University of Virginia. They first appeared in the university records in the 1820s. One of the earliest photographs of the university showed a black woman holding a white child in her arms, obviously a servant. There is an unsubstantiated story that the university's founder, Thomas Jefferson, permitted a house of prostitution near the university to service the sexual needs of the all-white male students. White students assaulted black women, slave and free here, young and old, with impunity. A 10-year-old slave girl was badly beaten in the 1850s for disputing a white student's right to whip her for chasing pigeons across the lawn. The faculty's demand for the student to withdraw from the school was dropped after he asserted his rights as a white man to discipline what he called uppity blacks. The University of Virginia, like all public schools in Virginia, except for Virginia State, remained off limits to black students and had been that way since 1870 due to the school segregation law. Nor was it possible for African Americans to pursue graduate studies, dentistry, law, or medicine at any of Virginia's taxpayer-supported public schools. Ironically, since the beginning of the 20th century, African Americans were the subject of academic study at the University of Virginia, but they could not enroll nor teach at UVA. In 1911, the Phelps Stowe Fund awarded $12,000 for the creation of fellowships for the study of the Negro. And within a year, the University of Virginia's library was hailed as one of the largest libraries in the country in its possession of Negro, so-called Negro materials. The university was also the academic center of the state's eugenics ideology. Two of the nation's leading eugenicists were here, future medical school dean Harvey Ernest Jordan, no relation, and psychologist George Oscar Ferguson, who taught that Negroes were of inferior intellectual abilities and that eugenics were a means to protect the purity of the white race against the racial menace and contamination of Negroes, Jews, and the feeble-minded. Jordan Hall, completed in 1971 as part of the university's Health Sciences Center, was named in his honor. White women had been admitted at UVA on a case-by-case basis since 1893. Beginning in 1920, they were enrolled at the graduate professional schools, but there were dangers there for them too. One white woman wrote to NAACP Executive Secretary Walter White, saying, quote, "No matter what may be done to the first Negro who enters the university, it cannot be worse and probably not as bad as was done to the first women," unquote. Stanford Law Professor Lawrence Freeman recently summarized the legacy of the NAACP's legal staff. Quote, "They make up the small band of men and women who fight against injustice. The lawyers for the NAACP are not better human beings than the long than the non-lawyers who run the organization, but they have skills the non-lawyers lack. The civil rights movement owes a great deal to the NAACP, to Thurgood Marshall, and to his cadre of civil rights lawyers. However, by the 1930s, the NAACP seemingly experienced two steps backwards or each step forward in trying to secure the right of blacks to attend segregated schools. There were a variety of cases prior to Alice Jackson, such as Holcomb versus the University of North Carolina, Pearson versus Murray, and Missouri versus Gaines. Gaines won his case to be admitted to the law school, but shortly after he won his case, he disappeared and was never seen or heard from again. It requires courage, I know that here, you've been here for 30 years. It requires courage to be the first. The NAACP chief counsel, Charles Hamilton Houston, issued an appeal for well-qualified graduate students, but the appeal itself seemed almost defeated. Quote, "Are you willing to sacrifice upon the altar of civil liberty your professional career in the state of Virginia?" Sounds rather bombastic, doesn't it? Almost like an invitation to martyrdom, and perhaps it is, unquote. There were two would-be black applicants to the University of Virginia before Alice Jackson. One was a young man in Culpeper County whose father was a clergyman who soon dissuaded his son from enrolling at UVA because, as the father put it, quote, it would just cause trouble, and I don't want or need that kind of trouble. A Richmond bellhop backed down after receiving warnings from his employers and local whites to withdraw his application or lose his job. And there were at least seven black institutions in geographical proximity that were available to African Americans during the 1930s. Hampton Institute, Virginia Union in Richmond, St. Paul Normal Industrial School in Lawrenceville, of course Howard University in Washington, West Virginia State College, and Shaw University in Raleigh, North Carolina. A confidential NAACP memorandum noted that its Virginia desegregation efforts were universally condemned by the white press of Virginia, and had mixed results in the black press. The Richmond Planet, the state's oldest, black newspaper, was 100% supportive, but only had 2,000 subscribers, and at the time it was little more than a scandal sheet headlining murders, divorces, macabre accidents, and petty crime. The Norfolk Journal Guide, at that time America's fourth largest paper, was not supportive and instead supported the idea of improving conditions at Virginia State University. But eventually, the NAACP did find a qualified applicant in Alice Jackson. In August 1935, for the first time in the university's 116-year history, an African-American, Alice Carlotta Jackson, sought admission as a graduate student. This 22-year-old Virginia Union University teacher and daughter of a Richmond druggist, born in Richmond, was highly well-educated. She was educated at Clarksville Memorial College, received a bachelor's degree from Virginia Union, had attended Smith College in Northampton, and other schools. So Thurgood Marshall and others thought that she would make a fine candidate. But academically, the year 1934-35 was not good for Jackson. She admitted to her father that her last semester at Smith College had been somewhat of a complete failure because she blamed them for assigning her to classes for which she was not prepared. This caused a stress-induced insomnia that she could only relieve by drinking quantities of Ovaltine, of all things. Her nerves, she said, were in pretty bad shape. And between February and August of 1935, all of her applications for teaching positions at black schools in Alabama, Florida, Georgia, New Jersey, North Carolina, Virginia, and West Virginia had been rejected. She had submitted an application to the School of Romance Languages to study French. It was rejected in a September 1935 meeting of the Board of Visitors, who said that her application was denied on the grounds of state law and because of other good and sufficient reasons. In a feisty reply, Alice Jackson wrote back, "Gentlemen, in rejecting my application for admissions to the University of Virginia, you should have publicly stated that because I was a Negro and for other good and sufficient reasons not necessary to be herein enumerated, I wish to know in full the reasons why my application was rejected. So far as you're rejecting my application because I'm a Negro is concerned, I will discuss that further when you have itemized the other good and sufficient reasons upon which it was rejected." In his poem, University, former university student and future Pulitzer Prize winning poet Carl Superior satirized the university's intolerance, quote, "To hurt the Negro and avoid the Jew is the curriculum," unquote. More than half a century later, Alice Jackson told me about the numerous and anonymous threatening and racist letters that she received from what she called the, quote, so-called gentleman students at the University of Virginia. Meanwhile, the University of Virginia had friends in high places, and so it asked members of its alumni in the General Assembly to pass a law that would allow Negro students to be paid tuition to go outside of Virginia to study, known as the Dovell Act. And it almost became a joke. In order to get the tuition money, the students would have to apply to the University of Virginia. There are hundreds of letters in the files to the University of Virginia from students, and the first sentence says, "Dear sirs, I am a Negro. I would like to enroll at the University of Virginia." After the student was rejected, the state would pay the tuition for the student to attend a northern school. Alice Jackson was among them, and at the time, this led to an erosion of public support. But what is not well known is that her NAACP counsel in Virginia, Brian Hopkins, encouraged her to accept the deal. Even though Charles Hammond in Houston had declared to the black press, quote, "We will press suit against the University of Virginia as soon as possible," he quietly, in a quiet memorandum to crisis editor Roy Wilkins, Hamilton admitted that he reluctantly dropped the Jackson case, but he did not want Virginia officials to know that this was no longer a threat hanging over their heads. And one can hardly blame Alice Jackson. At the time, this was the Great Depression. Times were tough. White people were competing with blacks for jobs that usually had been reserved for jobs, such as cooks and waiters and janitors and that sort of thing. Jackson's initial financial package consisted of $75 and two round-trip tickets per semester, which she used to attend Columbia, from which she graduated. And she went on to a very distinguished educational career, eventually working for Mary McLeod Bethune in Florida and other schools, before finally retiring as professor of English in New Jersey in 1983. After Jackson's 1935 attempt, no black Virginian seriously considered applying to UVA until 15 years later, when Martinsville attorney Gregory Haynes Swanson became the first black student admitted to the University of Virginia when he was enrolled in the law school. He was already an attorney, but he was trying to secure a graduate degree in law. Among some of his classmates, one of them wrote to me many years later and said that they wanted, she was a female, white female, she said we wanted to be friends with him, but we chatted with him during classes, but we didn't make an effort to get together with him socially because we thought it would arouse animosity if it was perceived that he was dating white girls, unquote. And black women still had a hard road to travel during UVA's reluctant institutional transformation. Alfreda Louise Madison's 1950 application was rejected on the grounds that her record was not such to permit her to be enrolled at the University of Virginia. Two black female teachers from Bowling Green were rejected in 1952 on the grounds that equal educational offerings were available at the University of Virginia. Now, during the crisis of Alice Jackson and in the 1950s, the president of Virginia State College for Negroes, Joseph M. Gandy, saw this as an opportunity. When the state approached him about possibly setting up a law school, he truly replied that he would need an increase in his school's budget and his school also would need three new buildings. He got the three new buildings, he got the budget, he got the increased faculty, much to the extreme annoyance of the head of the NAACP in Virginia. Virginia State has not given up its law school dreams. According to its current 2020 vision plan, it still hopes to have a law school in place by the year 2020. Meanwhile, undeterred by race and history, Alice Jackson Houston sought admission to the university again in 1952 for a doctorate in English. She told me that officials first encouraged her application, and she said, time went by, didn't hear anything. So she said she finally called back and said, "What is the status of my application?" The response she got was, "What application?" She told me once, one of the few times that she actually expressed bitterness, she said to me, "Young man, the University of Virginia never forgets or forgives black folk who make trouble for you," unquote. But like many trailblazers, her courage was honored late in life. 55 years after her admission attempt, she was the guest speaker at the Office of African American Affairs Awards Banquet. In an unpublished autobiography, she later wrote, "In the late autumn of 1935, I filed an application to the University of Virginia for admission to graduate school. This action was the first seed sown in the state giving rise to the matter of equal education opportunities in Virginia, unquote. The African-American women who followed her were seeds that bloomed despite racist soil. In 1973, a Delta Sigma Theta sorority chapter became UVA's first black Greek organization. By 2009, three black women were past or current members of its board of visitors, Elise Godwin-Holland, Susan Dorsey, and Glenn Key. Elaine Jones was the first black female law student here at UVA, class of 1970, and the first female director counsel of the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund. Sheila Jackson Lee, law class of 1975, represented Texas in Congress. Grace Edmondson Harris earned master and doctorate degrees and later experienced a 32-year career at Virginia Commonwealth University's highest-ranking female in African America. During the final two decades of her life, Stewart received belated honors from the state and the university. She was an honored guest at a variety of banquets and events. There was a 1986 University Library exhibition, which I curated, that had part of her story told in it. She was an honored guest at the Virginia State Capitol Building, which at the time she was 74 years old. She savored her vindication. Quote, "I can look back on a life of excitement, a life of turbulence, a life of joy, a life of rewards and happiness, and can say it was all worth it, and I'd do it again if I had the chance." Alice Jackson Stewart died on June 13, 2001 in Brookline, Massachusetts, shortly after her 88th birthday, survived by her son, Massachusetts Superior Court Judge Julian T. Houston. Her first and second husbands had predeceased her. The Virginia General Assembly passed a resolution in her honor, acknowledging her as the first African-American to seek admission into a state graduate professional school, and that she left behind a legacy that has impacted thousands of Virginians. Her story is not generally known. Many of the published histories of the NAACP that I reviewed between the 1940s and 2009 do not mention her at all. Obviously, the NAACP does not like to talk about its few public defeats. 2 months before her death, Judge Houston donated his mother's papers, 20,000 items, here to the University of Virginia Special Collections Library, which later commemorated her with a luncheon and exhibit, the first African American ever to receive such an honor here at the University Library. Judge Houston played poignant tribute to his mother, quote, "She was fiercely independent. She never hesitated to stand up for what she believed was morally right, even at great personal cost. She firmly believed in the equality of the races and the equality of men and women and in the essential goodness of her fellow human beings. What she saw was not history, but justice. And so, for my dear beloved mother, at long last, justice has prevailed." Thank you.